This episode of the Everything Matters podcast is brought to you by BeLegendary.coach, where we transform leaders into legends. Are you a senior leader, entrepreneur, or executive looking to take your leadership to the next level? Are you dealing with things such as imposter syndrome, concerns with whether or not your leadership is lingering long after you've completed FaceTime, looking for new and innovative ways to connect with your team and to gain buy-in from stakeholders that you deal with on a daily basis? If any of this sounds like something that you're dealing with and you would like to take your leadership to an extraordinary level, your effectiveness to a legendary level, visit BeLegendary.coach. That's www.BeLegendary.coach and schedule your free performance analysis today. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the next episode of the Everything Matters podcast. My name is Bradford Speaks. I'm your host, also the founder and CEO of BeLegendary.coach, where we transform leaders into legends. Today's guest, as all my guests are, super special for me, Zaira Solano. I met Zaira, man, probably 13 years ago or so. I was actually working as a community director at an apartment complex here in the Atlanta area, and Zaira was one of my residents. We ended up connecting and developing a really neat friendship. And at the time, Zaira was in law school, and sometimes we'd go to the coffee shops and she would study for hours. I'd hang out for a little bit and then I'd head back to the apartment complex. I mean, she was so focused and so driven, and I knew she would do something really great. She was such a young, bright, intelligent, and motivated individual. She would finish law school and go on to start her law firm, Zaira Solano & Associates. And her passion has been helping immigrants come from all around the world to build a better life for themselves and their families right here in the United States. She's so clear about what her commitment is, that she is committed to helping more than 1 million people properly and legally migrate themselves to the United States to build a better life for themselves and their families. I'm so excited about this conversation and about having Zaira all these years later join me on my podcast. She's a mother of two. She's the wife of a military officer who serves our country proudly. She's moved over five times in 7 years. Being a military wife, that's a part of it, right? So thank you all for tuning in and supporting the show here and listening to her story of successes, breakdowns, breakthroughs, and failures. Please help me welcome everyone, Zaira Solano, to the Everything Matters podcast. Zaira, welcome to the show, love. Let's get it popping.
Zaira Solano, welcome to the Everything Matters podcast. Thank you so much for being on the show with me today. Like many of our really valuable and special guests, people are busy that are up to big things. It's hard to run people down. So thank you for making time out of your calendar to be with us today. Welcome.
Thank you, Brad. Thank you so much for the invitation. And it's not just an invitation to be on here, but an opportunity for us to reconnect again after so many years and social media. So I'm grateful that you thought of me and invited me.
Absolutely. Zaira, you've always been someone I thought very much of and thought very highly of and excited to see how you've grown and how you expanded. And I want to talk about all that stuff. You've built a family now. You've left Atlanta. I mean, there's just so much to talk about. So I'm excited to be able to get into all that. But first of all, I want to talk about you and I. We met and we talked about this a little bit off camera. We met back in 2009, 2010, 11, somewhere in that range. Yep. And you were in law school at that time.
But
before you came to Atlanta, though, let's talk about where you're originally from, because, you know, some people who are watching the show may not know Zaira hasn't always lived in the United States. So talk about where you're from, you know, what life was like for you growing up as a kid and what really inspired you to want to come to the United States to go to school and study law.
Yeah. So we'll go all the way back to what I call the motherland. My parents are both from Dominican Republic. And I spent some time there as a child. I was actually born in New York for purposes of being born here. But my mom went back to Dominican Republic. She and my dad knew that at some point they were going to build a life and a family in the U.S. Now that I'm an immigration lawyer, I understand the decision. It was much easier for her to come here with her green card at the time. She had legal status and deliver me. And then we went back. And so some of my earliest childhood memories are all in New York, where we first lived in Washington Heights. We were there for a few years. I think I was maybe around 4 or 5 years old. And then living there, you know, my mom realized that she wanted a kind of calmer, quieter community to raise me and my brother, 18 months younger, older than him. And we moved to Jersey. Right at Weehawken. If you've been through the Lincoln Tunnel, you've been to Weehawken. From our high school, we had like a amazing view of Midtown right on the Hudson River. And that was an amazing, just place to grow up in. It was a city, but yet it was small enough. There were a lot of Latinos there. The community was mostly, Latino, Irish, or Italian. Like that was the group of my friends. You were one of those three. Right. And Brad, I spent a lot of time outdoors as a kid. We were playing stickball. We were playing manhunt. We were just out and about all the time. And I loved it. I loved growing up north in the city.
That's awesome. You know, and, you know, you're several years younger than I am. You know, I want to tell my age here, and I certainly don't want to spill yours. But the fact that you actually grew up playing stickball and, and hangman.
Wallsies,
right? I mean, those are the kind of things I grew up, you know, playing. So it's really neat to know that you had very much a traditional kind of a childhood, being outdoors and getting exercise, things that I really value with my kids growing up. So awesome. So you're a Northern girl for the most part. You're a Yankee. As they
I am. And, you know, I moved to Atlanta my senior year in high school. So, you know, one thing I didn't say about my childhood story is that at the time we moved to New Jersey, my parents were separated and divorcing. And I hadn't quite started kindergarten yet. But I remember starting kindergarten and not speaking a lick of English because my mom didn't speak English and neither did my dad. So we were, you know, immigrants, although I was first generation, to just recently arrived to the U.S. And, they decided that they would have a much better future for themselves and that their children would have a much better opportunity at education and career wise. And so that's why they wanted to move here. I just recently learned from my mom that it was between New York and Spain. And you know, Spain was on the list because they thought, well, we speak Spanish. The main language is Spanish and Spain is Spanish. Let's go over there. But they didn't really have a lot of like connections or friends over there. And we had uncles and my grandfather had been coming here over the years. So they picked New York. But, you know, the whole reason was to give their children a better future, which all of us that are parents, that's what we want, right? We want to continue improving generation after generation and making sure that our kids outdo what we do and that they have much better opportunities. So it wasn't my decision, Brad, but it was my parents. And then I feel like when I moved to Atlanta to the South, which was very different. Oh my gosh, was it different? Yeah. It was like immigrating again. I felt like I was in a new country and, you know, I was lucky. I got to Atlanta and Atlanta is the mecca of diversity in the South. And when I went to college, a few hours away from Atlanta is when the Southern reality hit me and how different it was than the North.
Yeah. And I want to talk more about that as well. I want to go back to your parents' decision to make this move. And I'm sure that in the work that you do as an immigration attorney, that that's probably a pretty consistent story that you hear. People want to immigrate, looking for a better life for their family, looking for better opportunities for their kids. And your parents were really, they were really on the cutting edge. And maybe there's more parents than I realize who are thinking the same way. You know, I'm sure that back in the Dominican, a lot of parents are thinking, hey, if we get our kids born in the States, there's a lot of things that we'll have access to that they'll have access to. So talk about, you know, maybe some conversations that you've had with your mom and dad about that and what you've learned so far as being an immigration attorney, what the mindset is of people who are coming from other countries looking to have those opportunities available for their kids.
Brad, it's so hard to really understand and embrace it when you haven't lived it. My parents were dentists. They had gone to dental school in Dominican Republic, you know, career professionals. And you would think compared to the US, like, oh, they're dentists. They can work at a dental practice. They can start their own business, which they were trying to do. But what a dentist earns in a foreign country like Dominican Republic versus what you earn here in the United States is drastically different. And so for them to make the decision to leave their career behind, knowing that they couldn't just come here and all of a sudden practice, they would have to go to school all over again, learn a language before even going to school, for their for the sake of their children and as a family, knowing that they could live a better life. It's almost like life and death, if I could compare it to, you know, for my family, fortunately, my parents weren't living the situation that we see a lot on the news today, which is people mm-hmm. fleeing Central and South America and other countries due to political unrest, due to gang violence. Fortunately, that was not their situation. Their situation was, we are really going to struggle trying to raise two children in a country that till this day has very divided class system depending on education and income. And they just knew. I mean, America is the representation worldwide of freedom and opportunity, and that you can be quote poor, right? Low income here and have absolutely nothing, or come to this country with $50 in your pocket and you can be anything and you can be anyone and you can learn anything and you can succeed. And that's exactly what they came here to do. And unfortunately, my mom, as a single mom, Brad, she didn't have the ability to go to school and redo her education. I remember as a child that she was at the community college learning English. And I think to this day, how the heck did she do it with two little kids, 18 months apart? We were 4 and 5. How did she go to school, work, the little bit of work that she was able to find due to her lack of language skills? And you sink or swim. You know, you have your heart set on this country. You envision the life that you can have, and people come, and a lot of people succeed. I see it every day, Brad. My clients who are undocumented and don't have legal status, it is mind blowing what they can accomplish.
Wow.
Leave your family, leave your education, leave your friends, leave your culture, leave your language behind to start over again. You can freaking do anything.
Right. No question about it. And I want to talk about that. Like, you know, the people that you work with as an immigration attorney, you hear people say that people come over here illegally, right? And we know that's the case. People do come over here illegally, but there's also a bunch of people that come over here illegally and they get into the position with someone like you, and you support them in helping them get themselves legal. So talk about what that's like for them. And you talked about your mom, and I met your sweet mother. She's such a sweet lady.
Thank you.
You know, what's the first place that they're to start? Like, if they come here from another country, maybe not knowing the language, not understanding the culture, where's a good place for them to start to really get that process moving for themselves?
Whew, that's a challenging question, because they start off with the support system that they have in their community. So if they are living with relatives or friends that they know through neighbors from back home, that's really where they start. And they're like, hey, who do I talk to? What do I do? Where do I get help? Mm-hmm. And we have to look at immigrants who just arrived versus immigrants who've been here years and remain undocumented. And they're two different sets of people, because they have different fears and anxieties over the future just based on experience, right? So when you're brand new here and you weren't encountered by Homeland Security at the border, for example, where there's a process that's actually started and you're speaking to the government, that means you came in without getting detected. There's a lot to learn. And a lot of times immigration and getting legal status is not necessarily the priority. The priority is, I'm here. I got to eat. Right. I have maybe kids that I need to bring over, or I have elder parents back home, or a sick relative back home that I need to figure out how I'm going to make a living to support myself and then to support the people that I left back home. So immigration status is not necessarily at the forefront of their planning and what they're trying to do, which is build a better future. But once they do, then talking through the community, they find out, okay, I need to talk to an attorney. A lot of times they don't get to someone like me. They go to some professional in the community, for example, maybe someone who prepares taxes, or someone who does translations and is just kind of that resource. And, you know, bless their heart, many of them, I think, do have good intentions of helping immigrants, but they're not lawyers and they lack the knowledge and the expertise to actually submit the correct paperwork that will keep this person here and won't get them into further trouble, right? So they start looking for resources in the community. The ones that are able to pay for an attorney, they pay for one. And then there's also many nonprofit organizations that can help them. But the really challenging part is, just because your foot touched U.S. soil doesn't mean that you're protected or that you have an option. There's a lot of people, Brad, that call my office every day that there is nothing under the current law that I could do to help them get a work permit or to help them get legal status. And that's the hardest part of this job. And knowing that for so many years, there's been no change. The last immigration amnesty was in 20. Oh my gosh, I can't even think of the year. Bush administration, Bush Jr. 2001. Okay. There we go. That was the last, right before 9/11 is when they did some reform. And then obviously post 9/11, there are a lot of things they had to change.
Right.
I mean, we're talking 20 years and so many people can't do anything. And that's really hard. The laws are narrow. They're tough. Yeah. Everyone thinks like just because you give birth to a kid in the U.S. or you step foot here, that automatically you're eligible for government benefits. You're not, or that you're eligible to get a green card or work permit, and you're not. And there's people who think, you know, Brad, as a U.S. citizen, you might be as ignorant enough to think, well, I'm married now. Let me get my spouse. Let me just go. Let me go to the Social Security office and fill out the paperwork. That's not how it works. It's a very complicated process.
Yeah. And need someone with your expertise, to your point. So, you know, one of the things I was thinking as you were talking earlier, Zaira, about, you know, like when you speak, and I imagine that other immigrants might see this country in the same way. And there are a lot of people who are born in America, who are born and bred here, been there their entire lives. And I think that when you're born into liberty that way, and you're born into freedom the way, or at least, the, you know, what appears to be freedom and liberty, right? I don't think we have the kind of freedom that we really like to have, but it's what we got, and it's better than a lot of other countries offers, right?
Agreed.
So one thing I hear in what you're speaking is that, and I've heard this from other people who immigrated from other countries, is that Americans don't really realize how good they have it. So talk about that. You mentioned earlier about the experience, right? Like, unless you've been through it, you really don't know. So talk about how an immigrant who is coming here from another country, maybe fleeing for political reasons or whatever it might be, how do they view America as being this melting pot for opportunity?
So I think it's just what we hear as immigrants from family members and friends and what they've been able to accomplish. I think the education system, first of all, that education is free in this country. That's not how it is in a lot of other countries. Even what's considered public schools, you must pay an education fee. You have to buy uniforms. You have to get books, etc. You know, education is one thing that is understood and perceived around the world as being free here. The business ownership, and yes, we have taxes, and in other countries, you have taxes that you need to pay. But just the ability to get loans or to start a business with almost nothing, which, you know, is my case, I'm sure we'll get to later, is something that you can do here and not necessarily in other countries. In other countries, for example, I was at a workshop, a business conference in France, and just we did a session on employment law. And what the employment law is like there and what the market is like there and the rights that employees have compared to the U.S. was just insane. I would consider it insane because I'm used to the American way, right?
That's right.
And it's just perceived that you can do anything here. We hear it in songs, right? Frank Sinatra's New York, New York, which then leads me to Alicia Keys and Jay-Z, New York, New York. And it's like, you know, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. And I just don't think people have fear here because when I say people, immigrants, the government to an extent is supportive in their eyes compared to the government in our home countries. And you can do anything here. And I think going back to education, parents, immigrant parents really believe that, and I think not just immigrant parents too, but low income parents and communities, if many of them understand that education is your way out of poverty, and education can be your way out of a lot of the circumstances that your parents lived. And so that alone, I believe, is one of the driving factors to come here. And then secondly, I really just think safety. There's we're, despite everything we're seeing with, you know, police brutality, and how social media makes it so much easier for us to now see what's been going on for many years with marginalized communities.
Right.
We're a lot safer than other countries. You can call the police and they'll hopefully show up and at least file a complaint. Whereas in a lot of other countries, you call the police and they're all conspiring with whoever, you know, you have a complaint to file against. Just a lot of different things, Brad. I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, very well said. Yeah, you're right. I mean, some countries you call the police and they come to the community and they'll shake you down. What you got? We'll get you off the hook. Right.
Right.
And like, dude, I'm calling you to help protect me. So, yeah, I can certainly see that being a huge benefit. So I wanted to kind of talk about what inspired you, you know, coming here very young, you know, and it's interesting to see how, you know, you came here at a very young age, your parents brought you here, you had this awareness, even as a young person, you know, you figured out through conversation or maybe through osmosis, however that came about, and understood how and why your parents did what they did. Right. But there are a lot of people that might have that type of information and knowledge. Right. What was it that inspired you to actually become an attorney, for one? And secondly, out of all the different areas of law that you could have practiced, you chose immigration. Why is that?
So starting off with attorney, Brad, I didn't decide to pursue this career until high school. For as long as I could remember, I was going to be a medical doctor. I was going to be OBGYN. I was going to deliver babies.
I think I remember you telling me that.
That was it. And my godmother, who's my aunt, my mom's sister, that's what she did for a living, and in Dominican Republic. And I would spend summers down there. And every once in a while, you know, she'd scrub me up and I'd be in scrubs and we'd ask the patient for permission. Again, things very different outside of the U.S.
Right.
If I could like observe the C-section, and the patients would be like, sure. Cause you know, I'm a little girl and the patients are women and you know, they want me to be inspired. And so I'd step on my little stool at the end of the operating table and just like be fascinated with baby delivery. And I really thought that's what I was going to do. And my social studies professor in, I think, eighth grade, I was in a high school where the, eighth graders, I was in gifted and talented. And so we got to take a lot of freshman courses and do high school stuff. Gotcha. So he said, hey, have you ever thought about, mock trial? And I was like, what mock trial? What is that? What is it about? And he explained it to me and I showed up to practice, and mock trial is basically what I'm saying. It's a fake trial where schools have teams of attorneys and witnesses. They give you the fact pattern and you compete against each other. So he said,
like
I think
debate,
you make
like a debate, sort of like a debate club kind of. Yeah.
Basically, he's like, I think you'd make a great witness. Okay, sure. So I decide to do it. I think in my former life, I must have been some kind of actress, entertainer, something, because I love making people laugh behind the scenes, not so much like for the world to see. So I'm like, yeah, I think I could do this. I had an outgoing personality. You know, I participated in a lot of clubs activities. I did it and I fell in love. I was like, this is so cool. And then the next year I applied to be, I competed to be an attorney and I got it. And then after that, I did mock trial all through high school and I won awards. And when I moved to Atlanta, by coincidence, the high school that, I went to just for my senior year, they had a mock trial team. Okay. And, yeah, I remember DeKalb County Courthouse. I remember competing there and I still have my plaque. It hangs up and it's in my office in Atlanta that says I won. So that's when the interest started. And I've been working since I was 13 years old, you know, by my own. I wanted to work. I always had, I think since the womb, a level of independence that I now see in my child, and I'm bracing myself for what's to come.
Yeah.
But I've always worked, and working with the mock trial coaches, I would beg for volunteer opportunities. I would beg them to please take me to the office to let me work. I'll do copies, whatever you want. Just let me work for you. And my senior year in Atlanta, one of the attorneys referred me to another one, and right off right in Buckhead. And I worked with her doing a lot of what I would consider personal assistant tasks, but being in it with the attorneys and the paralegals. And I just never looked back, Brad. That's all I wanted to do. So that answers the attorney question. You know, immigration, varies. So I mentioned I've been working since I was 13, right? Mm-hmm. And I started with attorneys at 17, and I've always worked in the legal industry. I bartended and served for a little bit to have some extra income, but I was basically working with attorneys. Back in the day, you'll remember this, you could open up a phone book. And before I met you, Brad, I opened up the phone book. I looked for attorneys that had Spanish sounding last names because that's my first language. And I knew that if I called and said, I speak Spanish, that I was going to get hired because it's such a growing need, right?
Right. For sure.
Especially in Atlanta. Like Atlanta was really blowing up with the Latino community in the early 2000s. And it still is. Silly. And so I started working for attorneys, and all through college and law school at the law firms I worked at, most of them serve the immigrant community, not necessarily doing immigration. And I was appalled by the lack of communication, the lack of empowerment to the client to understand what's their legal problem. What are the possibilities and solutions? How can we get a good outcome for you? Mm-hmm. And it didn't make sense to me. And so that's when I started kind of thinking, I want to work with immigrants. And I did. I got a job working at a law firm that practiced immigration in law school. Again, a professor gave me a hand and said, hey, I really think you should consider working at this firm. I interviewed, got the job, and I gave up a study abroad in Spain to go learn from, you know, this very experienced attorney. Wow. And that's when I decided. Between that and a human trafficking seminar that I went to, it was my calling. I was like, this is where I need to be.
That's great.
So it's a long story, but I gave you some snippets.
Yeah, that's a great story. I mean, you know, I'm always interested to see what really gets people moving into what direction they want to go with their life. And, you know, one thing I hear in what you're sharing is also you've had some great sort of guideposts, people who were willing to invest in you, people who saw something in you, that you had a talent, you had a gift, and they offered you opportunities to nurture that, which I think is huge for a young person. You know, to have someone, whether it's a parent, a godmother, you know, in your case, or an auntie, whoever it might be, that gives kids opportunity so they can see themselves as being bigger than what they actually might see themselves as. Right. So that's really, really awesome.
And through the experience, Brad, of working with those attorneys, you know, not to fault or speak negatively about them, but one thing attorneys, like true diehard attorneys, do is practice law, and everything else that comes with it, it's just not their forte. And attorneys frequently forget that we are in a services-based industry. We service people. We work with human beings. And yes, it's a file. And yes, we need to figure out the facts and what the analysis is, etc. But you should know what your client looks like. You should know that if they have, you know, three roads we can go down, we should explain to them what the pros and cons are of each road and help them decide. And it doesn't matter whether you're uneducated and maybe second grade was your highest level of education, or if you're running a multi-million dollar construction business. I have the approach, and I did back then, I think just from my upbringing at home and being a human being, that you treat your clients the same. And that really motivated me to work with immigrants, because I figured if this is happening just in my little bit of experience with a few attorneys and law firms, this has to be a nationwide, worldwide problem where immigrants are not empowered on their cases.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, you know, I agree. I think the same thing has happened in our medical industry too. Doctors don't see their patients as really human beings who are in need, and that they're providing a service. It's almost like you're a number, and they're just trying to spend their 15 minutes to just move you through the problem, and you miss things. You know, I go to a very specialized doctor here in the Decatur area, and they really, I mean, I took an hour and a half to do a physical. I haven't done an hour and a half physical in a minute, almost 2 hours. And I mean, they checked everything.
I'm like, you thought something might be wrong.
Like, man, I mean, it was very extensive. It was exhaustive, which I think is, you need a comprehensive checkup, especially at my age. You get to a point, it's like, okay, you start checking different things, you know? So to your point, I think that in the space of law as well, because a lot of it is money driven, people do lose sight of the difference and the impact that they can have for people. If you just take your time and slow down and look at people as they're just humans trying to survive. That's it.
Right. And so, in most areas of law, we're dealing with people in crisis, right? That doesn't mean they're going to jail, but it means that in their eyes, in their life, this issue that they've brought you is crisis.
No more Uno. That's right. It is top priority for them. And that should be given complete attention. So this speaks, and it's a great segue into what I know you're committed to and what you share with me. And that commitment is you want to support and help over at least a million immigrants become American citizens in the next 10 years. And you also have a big commitment to, you said, to raising amazing human beings. I know you have two kids. I want you to talk about them as well. So first talk about your commitment to getting these million immigrants here in the next 10 years. Like, how's that look and how's that working and how are you going to make that happen? What's your strategy?
Oh, Brad, it's
big
so
one.
Much.
It's a big one.
It's a hairy, audacious goal. So at the firm, with my leadership team, we have, that's one of our big hairy, audacious goals. We have other ones of, you know, how many offices we're going to open, et cetera. Okay. And the very core of what we do impacts one immigrant at a time, which then impacts one family at a time and then impacts the community. And the more and more of these families we have that we can remove this legal barrier and obstacle that's holding them back from going for and reaching their dreams, the more of them we help, the more we empower the immigrant community. And the more empowered people we have in the immigrant community who are reaching their goals, that's really going to uplift immigrants as a whole in this nation. And I can't wait for the day, hopefully in my lifetime, where immigrants are valued as assets, to our country and not the opposite. And so with my team, when we reach, our goal of helping 1 million people, that's huge. That is, that's huge. An impact that we're making. Not just in Atlanta, you know, we have clients in Alabama. That's our second highest state of clients. And then in the Carolinas, and we've expanded into helping clients all over the country. What an effect, what an impact in my life I could do. And I can't do it by myself. I need a whole entire team of talented people to reach that. And so we're ready. You know, we're fighting for it. We're hiring people left and right. We're doing additional marketing to get out there to more people. The immigrant community has gone through a lot of personal trauma, and then they go through trauma working with non-attorneys or attorneys who don't know what they're doing. And we want to help them. And just think generational wise, this one family we can help, how it impacts their children and how it's going to impact their grandkids and so on and so forth. And so that's the mission, and
love it.
We're working really hard. I could tell you that much.
Yeah. I can know you're hard to get a hold of. So I know you're working really hard, like around the clock. So that's awesome. And, you know, I agree. I think that, you know, it's, you know, what they say, you know, reach one, teach one, right? It's the same thing. It's the same. And your impact is like a ripple effect. You know, you impact one, impact a family, that becomes a community, it becomes the world. And I just really applaud you for the work that you're doing for that. And also, you're welcome. Also, inside of that, I know you have another mission to impact young people, right? You having been a young person, you were really young when I met you, and you were so lit up about what you were doing. I remember when you would go spend, like, you know, you go to the beach, and I'm like, what are you going to do at the beach? I'm just going to study. You've got all these books and books that you're reading.
I did.
I'm like, that's not a vacation, Zyra. He's like, well, I got to, because I got to get ready for the bar. You know,
so, I remember that. Oh, that summer was horrible. Like that Starbucks on Peachtree Industrial and like North Druid Hills.
Yes.
I never went back after I took the bar exam. I was like, this chapter is closed. You served your purpose, Starbucks. I'm not going to that location ever again. And I haven't been back. I've driven by it though.
Outstanding. So in the space of being an inspiration for young people, like, what do you want to, what difference do you want to make with young people, and how are you going about doing that with people who, you know, maybe looking to immigrate or maybe looking to maybe become an immigration attorney at some point? So how are you looking to impact those people?
So it goes back, Brad, to something that you mentioned earlier, where there were mentors, educators, people who encouraged me, people who supported me, you know, family members as well, my mom being my number one cheerleader. And myself and my husband, Robert, we have a huge sense of responsibility to pay it forward. And we specifically like to focus on minority youth, who more than anyone in this world and in this country specifically need to hear and see from people like us who in their eyes, you know, we made it, right? That's how they see us. We're right. professionals. We have a family. You know, we have a wonderful, life, and it's important. Just the same way that my legal work and my team can help one immigrant at a time and one family member, and that keeps growing into a spider web effect from community, et cetera. It's the same thing with our youth. And so we have, a scholarship as a family, that we sponsor, at my husband's high school in New York. He went to a Catholic high school growing up, and, we, currently have 4 students who are minorities, and we support them through tuition assistance. Awesome. My law firm, we have, scholarships, for 2 recipients per year. They must be, DACA students who we all know I call them the DACA kids. Some of them are already in their 30s. Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. So all the young people that came here, before they were age 16, and Obama implemented the DACA program so they could get a work permit. And that's it. It's not a legal status. It's not a green card. Okay. It's not a citizenship. They face enormous challenges, and discrimination despite the fact that they have a work permit. So we offer scholarships as a firm to them. And then we both mentor anybody who reaches out to us and says, "Hey, like, can I get your advice? Can I mentor?" My husband's an Army officer, and he does lots of mentorship through his fraternity, Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity. And I do anybody who reaches out. And by being on social media and educating the community, you know, and also marketing to get clients, I am just astonished at how many young people reach out to me and say, "I'm so inspired, you know, by you. I want to be an immigration attorney, or I'm thinking about going to law school." And I make time for all of them. So, you know, my marketing team knows that when a message like that comes through on TikTok or whatnot, to let me know, and we put something on my calendar, you know, and I'll just have a Zoom meeting to get to know a little bit more about them and encourage them, because a lot of them come from homes where they're going to be the first person to go to college. Or they don't have the support simply because their parents lack the experience, right, to guide them through the process. So
that's right.
You know, and I have reminders, and I check up on them, and they're all over the country, and some of them I've never met in person. And then we also do internships and externships for law school students and college students. So, you know, as I continue to grow the firm and the team, it's one of my goals after I get through this second baby delivery that's coming up soon, that I can carve out more time on my schedule to either do something bigger with the youth, or to be able to have more contact and have more meaningful mentorship.
Man, outstanding. You're juggling a lot of balls. I mean, with another baby on the way, you're going to have 2 kids. You're going to have 2 kids under 2.
Have you had 2 under 2, Brad? I'm going to put you on my 2 under 2 board of directors. I'm going to need it.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I got you covered. You know, I got you covered. Oh, my God. Yeah, I had 3 that were, I had 1 that was just in training, like training underwear, and I had 2 in Pampers at the same time. My God, it was insane. I mean, you're bathing 2 at the same time. You're feeding 2 at the same time. Yeah, it was a handful. But I tell you, I look back on it now and I wouldn't trade it for a thing. You're going to be really inspired by what you can take on. And the thing about it is, you're already taking on a bunch of stuff anyway, with mentoring, scholarships, and all the stuff you're doing. Taking on another kid is going to be like, "Okay, I got one more, no big deal, that I'm mentoring."
A little different, but I don't know if it's a man thing. Man, I'm not trying to offend you. You sound just like my husband. He's like, "We can have those 6 kids. Like, what? 2 versus 6 is the same thing." I said, "Sir."
I mean, really? Because you start being able to hand down things. You know, okay, these shoes don't fit you anymore. Hey, these are your shoes right here. It all works. Right. So, and like I said, you look back on it and you don't think you can do it, but you really,
we're looking forward to it, because, I didn't put this down as a goal, but one of my husband's goals, he's like, I want to contribute amazing human beings to the world. And that means we got to have kids to do that. Right. But we're excited because, from my mom, I have my younger brother and, Sky, my daughter, she's 14 months. She just turned 14 months 2 days ago. I'm having another girl. And so she's going to have a BFF. And when we're long gone, you know, they're going to have each other, and we are going to raise raise them in a way that I was raised, you know, family first, family matters. You can make friends, but your sibling is your first best friend. And, I'm just looking forward to that experience, as a mother, but really to just see these two human beings grow together and care for each other and, you know, just conquer life with each other. I'm excited about that.
That's awesome, man. Congratulations to you on Sky and the new arrival. You have a name for her yet? The new one?
We don't. Okay. We call her Baby Baguette because we made her in Paris. Okay. So that's her name.
Okay. Baby Baguette.
My aunt calls her Little Paris in Spanish. So it's funny. Cool. Everyone has a different name for her. And it was the same when I was pregnant with Sky.
That is awesome, man. That's really great. So I look forward to seeing that happen on social media. Now, Zaira, tell us, how many firms, I know you mentioned that you're impacting people all over the country right now. So I know you started your first firm here in Atlanta, you know, and it was funny. I was thinking about earlier when we first met and I asked you, I said, well, so where are you going to practice at? I remember specifically, I think we were at lunch one day and I asked you, so where are you going to practice law? Like, you know, what law firm? She's like, I'm going to hang my own shingle. And I was like, okay, I got that, you know, and you've done that. So you did it in Atlanta. I know you're living in Phoenix now. So where do you have physical offices located right now, or at least some kind of a presence in the country right now? Where are you located?
So Atlanta and Birmingham are two storefronts, for lack of a better term. Atlanta, you know, I opened right after you and I had that conversation. That was November 2011. I think it was the week of Thanksgiving. I'm like, what was I thinking? That was such a... Why would, you know, but that's like, you don't know what you don't know, right? I had no plan. Right. I just knew I had a laptop. Right. I had a cell phone. I had some office supplies and I was going to find an alumni from the law school to rent me some space on the cheap. But Atlanta was first. And then by coincidence, the universe provided, because you put out into the universe what it is that you're looking for and what you want, and the universe will provide. And so I knew that I wanted to practice immigration law, which is federal law, which means I can help a client in any of the, you know, 50 U.S. states and territories, versus if you're going to do criminal law, family law, wills, trusts, and estates, you're limited to the state where you're barred. And so I got on the radio through my brother by mistake. He sent kind of an introduction email. My brother's in the music industry. Just for the purpose of introducing us, I misunderstood it. And I thought it was an invitation for me to talk to this producer at a radio station for me to get on. And so I replied and he's like, no, that wasn't the purpose of the email. I just kind of wanted to start lightly introducing you. But the producer was down. I was like, yeah, let's chat. Come on in. And he was like, let's do a radio show. And I had just passed the bar. I said, you know, I've only been practicing for like 2 months. And I only have a few clients, and how am I going to answer these questions when people are asking me things that I may not know about? I'm in the mode where I've got my paralegal law clerk experience and I have my mentors that I'm going to reach out to just go through my cases before I actually file them. It's like, I can't do that live on the radio. He's like, yes, you can. Brad, I listened to this man. And he's like, I'll give you a deal. You don't even have to pay me until, you know, the end of the first month. Cause I'm telling you, you're going to get at least a few clients who are going to pay you and you'll be able to pay me. I said, all right, bet. Let's do it.
Nice.
So I did. And I got on the radio. And then through that experience, a few months in, someone, a newscaster from Alabama, was like, we really have a need for a Spanish speaking immigration attorney in all of Alabama, but in Birmingham. Why don't we advertise you in Birmingham? And I was like, I don't have an office in Birmingham. That's okay. You could get a Regis office. You could tell them to come to Atlanta. I said, you know how the immigrant community is. You know, this was way back before the pandemic. Video phone communication is not their way of doing business. They want to smell you, feel you, touch you, right?
That's right.
So that's another opportunity that I was like, I'm not ready for that. I can't do that. And that man and that woman who are still doing my radio stuff in Alabama would not leave me alone, Brad. And then one day I said, you know what? Fine. I will go ahead, start announcing me, and I will come on Fridays and rent a Regis space and meet clients. Brad, I never look back. We are still in Alabama and we still have that office. So those are two office locations. And we were mostly in those two states for years. And in the last few years, we now have clients all over the country that we never meet in person. We just Zoom and email and speak on the phone, and they're very comfortable and trust us. And the next location is Phoenix. So once I kind of start getting settled back in for maternity leave, my team will we're going to set some goals next quarter to kind of get that going and start an office here, because there's tons of people who have this need that we can help with.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. All right, Zaira. So on the Everything Matters podcast, since it is about performance, you know, me being a performance coach and always looking for what is it that makes high performers tick. You've been a high performer for a long time in a lot of different areas, high school, elementary school, throughout life, law school. You've taken on things that maybe you didn't know the answer to. You didn't know how it was going to turn out, but you did it anyway. And I call that courage. It's knowing that the fear is there and stepping into it anyway. So everything you share so far has been from the perspective of an attorney, all the difference you're making, working with people, the team you're building and things like that. Talk about maybe one of the challenges of being a CEO and being a business owner. I know there's a lot of things that go into that. So what's one of the failures that you had to face or challenges that you came across that you was like, man, I don't know how I'm going to get through this, or, you know, how am I going to work this out? And you, what did you do to find your way through that and work it out on the other end?
How much time we got?
I heard that. Hey, the floor is yours. I want to hear it.
I say that because you fail your way to success, right? You have to, you know, that's how you learn. And I don't know what it is in our subconscious and the stories that, you know, are handed down from our parents and our educators that as a child, you learn from failure, right? You're right. Telling my daughter, like, boom, if you do that, you're going to fall and you're going to bump your head. And, you know, we advise and we tell. Right. And then after she bumps her head a couple times, she's like, oh, that's right. I can't walk over there. I can't touch that thing. Why don't we talk to adults like that? You know? I talk to my team all the time about this. We have to actually fail at certain things, pick up, learn from them, see the beautiful lesson and gift wrapped up in this problem, which I really call an opportunity to succeed. So I would say some of the failures or big, you know, failure that I can think of running a business is just, it's just a challenge of leadership and how to lead people. And I can think of examples where through my journey as an attorney and CEO, I've had to really grow up and learn things. And I've had situations where you have to explain to the team that, hey, I was planning and this is the hypothesis I had. I don't have all the answers figured out. I tell them this all the time. I do not have the answers. If I had the answers, I would have done this 10 years ago. And, you know, we wouldn't be going through this right now. But, you know, just having the entrepreneurial maturity to have transparent communication and say, I know we had this meeting months ago and we said this is what we're going to do and we did it and it's not working. And we're going to pivot this way, or we're going to abandon this plan completely. And it took me years to figure out how to communicate that, how to be transparent with the team, because that's what people are looking for, right? That's what they want. Sure. One of the qualities that they want in a leader, that's also, I think, a quality that people want in a small or large organization. People want to know, where is the ship heading? Where are we going? And a big failure that I say I had for years is I was just so focused with my head down, getting the work done, being the only attorney with several support staff, that I missed a lot of those, things as a leader. And I learned, that I had to communicate better. And then the other big lesson that I learned was, it's not just about me. I can't do this all by myself. I need other really talented people. And I would say, Brad, I waited far too long to grow the business by bringing on other leaders. I had a lot of helpers, right? As we would call. Right. Not that there was anything wrong with them, but they were in positions subordinate to me. Like I should have brought on much earlier in the business's life, other people who were beyond my level and knew more about me about certain aspects to really make it a successful organization for my team and for my clients too. So a couple of examples in there, but
yeah. That's awesome. You know, I think that, you know, I do leadership coaching and leadership development. So, you know, I always tell people that I'm coaching, you know, being a leader is about being a leader. It's not about doing. Like, leading is not doing,
right?
You know, and it sounds like you were doing a lot of doing, like I'm doing this, doing that, you know, and then when you start to step back from the operation, you say, what does it look like to actually be a leader? And it's what you talked about. Being a leader is being a great communicator. Being transparent with the people that you're leading so that they're clear about where they're going next. What's our destination? What's the strategy for getting us there? Right. What's my role in that strategy? People being clear about what they're up to. Right.
Yep.
And so being a leader is really about it's not a thing. It's a presence of the person who's leading that makes people feel enrolled in whatever direction that they're taking them. And a great leader, people that I've had as great leaders for me, have always been someone I'm like, you know, I don't care where this guy's going or where this lady's going. I'm with them because I believe and I trust them 100% that they know what they're talking about. And I think a lot of things for leaders, a lot of times it's hard for them to say, I don't know. Right. So I acknowledge you for having the courage to say, hey, I'm not sure this is going to work, but we're going to have the courage and step out and stick our neck out and do it anyway, because nobody else is doing it. And if it works, we're going to strike gold. Right. And if it doesn't work, we go back to the drawing board, we scrap it, and we pick up another plan.
Yeah.
And that takes
you
got to
be okay with that. Yeah, you're right. It takes courage that's it. That's the word. It takes a lot of courage to be a leader, to run an organization. And it takes even more courage, Brad, to grow, because growth is painful. And growth,
that's right.
You never arrive because you want more or you want better all the time. And, you know, my team hears this all the time. I'm a bit of a hard ass because I was raised that way. Like I was telling them the other day, we do Monday morning mindset. We all come together real quick, 10, 15 minutes, and I share some type of mindset lesson from whatever I'm learning or have learned in the past. Mm-hmm. I brought home an A. Why didn't you get an A plus? Like what happened here? What did you miss? You know, so that's the kind of person I am. Yeah. And I also grew up with this interview, what we're talking about, you know, and what people perceive to be as my success, like this was destined. This was supposed to happen. Like there was no other imagination that I wouldn't be living the life I'm living today. And that doesn't always involve pats on the back and celebrations. And I have a hard time celebrating, and I have to actively remember to give pats on the back and to celebrate. Cause although I don't need that to thrive and to do what I need to do, we're all human. And a lot of people that's part of their motivation. That's part of who they are as a person and really part of what keeps them engaged and believing in what they're doing on a daily basis. The growth comes with a lot of letting go and giving up control of things and empowering people and dealing with some pains. That's just part of the process. Nothing good ever comes easy. When do you have something amazing in life and you look back and you're like, oh, that was a piece of cake.
I can't think of anything. No, it doesn't work that way. It does not work that way. No. And I can appreciate that because you appreciate it more, right? When you actually had to put in some blood, sweat, and tears to get it. It's like, man, it took something to get that. And what happens is, when people can see what they can do, they get inspired that, man, if I did that like that, I did all that work and I got it. Well, what could I really do?
Yeah.
That's inspiration.
Right.
Right. That's when people start seeing the possibilities of what they could actually do and their capabilities to make that happen. Outstanding. So one last thing I want to ask you, Zara, a couple more things. Number one, first thing is for any young person that might be watching this podcast, right? They may have a different path to getting to where you got, right? Everybody has their way of going about doing it. What do you see and what advice would you give someone who's maybe inspired by what you're doing and the difference that you're making for people who are looking to come into this country to take advantage of the opportunities that are available to them? What advice would you give some young person who might want to follow your tracks in a sense?
Make sure you have passion about what it is you want to do. You know, if you're seeing me right now and you're like, oh, it would be awesome to be an attorney. You don't have to be an immigration attorney, or it would be awesome to help people through the medical field or through some other field. Be passionate about it, because everything else comes with it and everything else will fall into place if you are putting your intentions out into the universe about your goals and what you want to achieve and reach. But you got to love what you're doing. There's nothing worse than waking up every day and showing up to a job that you don't care about, that you're not making an impact. And it's just boring and you have no meaning. So I really believe in passion and how it fulfills your purpose. So that would be number one, Brad. And number two is work harder than everyone else. Yes, we have to work smart many times and not necessarily harder. But what I can tell you about all the high performers around me, you know, in my circle, is we all worked and continue working our butts off on a daily basis to grow and to learn and to have an impact on not just our clients, but the actual team, the individuals that work with us. And even on my team, you know, I've had conversations, Brad, you know, fun conversations about compensation and how somebody wants to get paid more. Well, what value can you bring to our organization? What value can you provide to the clients? And I'm sorry, if you're clocking out at 4:58 because you came in, you know, at 7:58, right, you're not, you got to give, you know, a little bit. And so you have to work harder. In law school, I worked really freaking hard. In undergrad, math was not my strong, my strong subject, but I somehow ended up in calculus and statistics, in undergrad. And I went to the tutor every single week that the school offered for free. And I put in the work, and I knew that what my success in that class had nothing to do with me being a lawyer and all these plans I had, but I knew that I had to get a good grade on the class to keep my GPA up along with the rest. So you've got to work hard. If you are, you know, looking at my TikTok and I got all these followers and people commenting, like, I've been doing this for 11 years. It's taken a long time and a lot of work. So work really hard and more than other people. It will be seen. It will be recognized and others will help you move up. And then lastly, patience, which I've just been learning in the last few years. I am an impatient person when it comes to reaching goals and getting results. And, you know, I'm like this, Brad, but not everyone's like that. And I had to learn that's okay. Everyone doesn't have to work at my speed. But I also have to be patient with the realistic goals that we set. And through some of the trial and error that I've gone through, you know, with my team and procedures and planning, I have a much more realistic approach on patience now. And when I say that, sometimes my team brings some things up. They're like, hey, we got to improve this. We have to work on this. I noticed this. And I'm like, yeah, me too. I noticed that last year. And that's a fire that's kind of burning, but we got this other big fire that's burning over here. And quite frankly, we got to give this one attention before we get to that one. And we're just going to have to be patient and come back to that. And that wasn't me before. I'd be like, no, we got to put this one out and that one out and this one out.
Right. All at the same time.
Yeah. Be patient. When you're passionate and you're working harder than everyone else, that doesn't mean you're going to get results like this. It's still going to take years, but be patient, as best as you can.
That's awesome. And one last question I'm thinking about, you know, as I talked about what leadership is, it's a way of being, right? It's a presence of something you carry. So in choosing to be patient, what difference has that made in your leadership? Curious to know.
It's made me a more understanding leader, because I think part what comes with patience is also recognizing that everybody's not you. If they were you, they'd be doing exactly what you're doing right now, right?
It is, right.
And so just you know, understanding what people's capacity is, understanding that there are circumstances, you know, outside of work, that they're human beings. They have lives too. Everybody has problems, right? Everybody has great days too.
That's right.
I think being patient has allowed me to connect more with members of the team and just understand them, and what it was like when I was in their shoes many years ago. And then also being patient not necessarily working with people, but planning and making decisions for the firm, for the benefit of all. Patience has definitely helped me for planning, right? Because I used to plan with like crazy, hairy, audacious goals all the time. And then after putting things into motion and having really talented, reliable people working with me, you know, for years, I'm like, man, even my best, we couldn't quite hit that. And it's like, because it's just, it's not reasonable. So,
yeah. That's awesome. I love it. Thank you so much for sharing everything that you're up to, man. Big things, high performing, you know, multiple offices. I'm so proud of you. So proud to call you my friend. And everything you're doing is really great. So, hey, if people listen to the podcast and they want to learn more about the work you do, maybe they need your services in some way. Maybe they want to call. Maybe they have a kid that they want to get mentorship with through your firm and the work that you do with your scholarship programs and such. How would people find you on social media? You know, we've got your website up here for people to see. But how would people find you on social media if they want to follow what you're doing?
Our Instagram is Solano Immigration Law Firm and TikTok is Solano Immigration Lawyer. You know, we're constantly posting on there every day, sometimes multiple times a day, and message me. I have a team that also checks on the messages too. And I'd be happy, just like you said, Brad, whether it's, you know, to consult about a case, offer mentorship, or you guys just want to know what's going on in the immigration world. Would love to have your support. And Brad, thank you so much, for again, thinking of me and inviting me, to your podcast. And it really helped me think through this journey that I don't always think through because we're always doing right and not taking time to reflect and look back. So I appreciate not just the invitation, but what this podcast has done for me today. So thank you so much.
Outstanding. My pleasure. It's been great being with you and look forward to the impact that you'll continue to make. And I want to invite you to, I'll come in and do a Motivation Monday for you one time. If you wanted me to do a little 15-minute pep talk, maybe to break it up for the team.
Yes.
Hey, invite me. I'd love to.
Okay. I would love to. Let's get that coordinated. Right. I think they'll be excited too to hear from somebody else. So.
Right. Exactly. A little different voice, different style, different swag.
I'll step up my game after you. They're going to be want Brad.
We'll make it happen. We'll make it happen. Sarah, thank you so much. All the best to you, your hubby, and your fam out there in Arizona. Stay cool, because I know it's hot as a...
Yes.
One of my college roommates used to say, Brad, man, it's hotter than a bear's ass out here today. We'd be out on the football field practicing, and you could see the waves coming off the turf.
He's like, I don't know how they do sports outside here. I have no idea.
Seriously.
I know.
Well, stay healthy, stay safe, stay cool, and... I will see you next time. Look forward to having this air and so excited for everything you're doing. Take care, hon.
Thank you, Brad. You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
This is Doris Brown's baby boy. We out.